Welcome everybody to the Future Melbourne Committee meeting number 48 on Monday 10 December 2018, and we are opening the meeting at 5:32 p.m. We may have a little bit more disruption as we identify how to fit some more people in, so please bear with us if that happens. Yes, it may be we need to find some seats. We're just working that out. Thanks, team. I'm looking at City of Melbourne team when I say that. Thank you. Well, I welcome councillors, management and members of the public. Oh, that's one of my things to come. If we could all turn off our phones, I'll say that now, or turn them to silent, please do so, so that we can run the meeting without disturbances from phones. That'd be fabulous. Thank you very much. But welcome to councillors, management and members of the public who have joined us here this evening for our meeting. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world, and it is a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important place for meetings and a location for events of a social, cultural, sporting, and educational significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that this meeting is being streamed live, and whilst we take every precaution that we can to ensure that you're not filmed, it may be that inadvertently your face will be included in our live streaming, and so we're putting you on notice now that that may happen. An audio and video recording of this meeting will be made available on the Council's website by close of business tomorrow. Whilst we also want to make sure that you know that our unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will be made available on the City of Melbourne website as soon as practicable. Should you have any queries about the conduct of this meeting, or any of the submissions and documentation processes, please do ask a member of our council business team at the end of the meeting, and our council business team is just here with us this evening. I've talked about mobile phones, which is fantastic. Thank you. Have we got a seat, Alia? Yeah, we do. Good. Thank you. The agenda comprises four reports from management. Apologies have been received from Councillors Francis Gilley and Councillor Pinder. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than six members voting in favour of it, then the decision can be referred to council for consideration. If a councillor has either a direct or an indirect interest, as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by the committee this evening, councillors, please note the type and nature of your interest prior to consideration of the item. It's now time for me to call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 47 that was held on Tuesday, 4 December 2018. Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillor Wood, thank you very much. And a councillor to second the motion, Councillor Oak, thank you very much. I'm now putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. It's unanimous, so I declare that motion carried. Thanks, councillors. I ask the councillors, are there any matters arising from those minutes that you would like to discuss at this point? No, thank you very much. The following submissions have been received in relation to the council's meeting procedures code in relation to the agenda tonight. For agenda item 6.1, which is Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program People's Panel Final Report, there are requests to speak from Janice Crosswhite, OAM, Mary Lou Howie, I believe it was going to be Luke Grasick, but Leah Moore is going to speak instead. Thanks, Leah. And Ray Cowling. We've had an item of correspondence also from Ray Cowling. In relation to agenda item 6.3, planning permit application TP 2016-858, which is 58 to 66 La Trobe Street, Melbourne. We've had requests to speak from Cher Jun and also from Shawa Di Un, also from Daniel Susan from Tract Consultants and from Kok Pen Yip. We've also had an item of correspondence from Cher Jun and from Shawa Di Un and from Daniel Susan from Tract Consultants. In relation to agenda item 6.4, Federation Square Victorian Heritage Register nomination submission, we've had requests to speak from Chris Thrum and Felicity Watson, who is from National Trust. And we've also had an item of correspondence from Chris Thrum and from Felicity Watson from the National Trust. I advise submitters that you will be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant item on the agenda is being considered. You will have 3 minutes to address the committee. It is the intention of the committee to adhere to this 3-minute time limit this evening. And to assist you, we have a countdown timer here on the wall. It will beep at the completion of 2 minutes to let you know that you have 1 minute remaining. It will then beep again, and at that time we will ask you to respectfully please take your seats. It is important to give everybody the opportunity to speak that we actually adhere to the time limit, so thank you very much in advance. Public questions. In accordance with Council's Meeting Procedures Code, we have a 15-minute period provided at the start of every meeting and also at the close of every meeting for members of the public to ask questions. These must be questions and not submissions. Questions can be no longer than 90 seconds in duration. And at the time, if you can raise your hand, come to the podium and provide your name and then ask your question, that would be fantastic. Thank you. Having given you all the rules, who has a question? Members of the public who may have a question for us at this point. There are 15 minutes at the end if you think of any in the meantime. So thank you very much. We're now up to reports from management. There are two reports from management for consideration under the major projects portfolio. The first one is agenda item 6.1, Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program. Oops, hope it's not me. No, it's not. We're going to do one more check if everyone can just have a look at their phones. I'm doing it as well. They're on silent. If you could just double check, that would be great because we've got some presentations coming up and it would be great if they're not interrupted. Everyone checking? Good, well done. I'm going to say it again, agenda item 6.1, Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program, People's Panel Final Report. I'm calling on Joanne Wandell, who is the QVMPR Program Director, to make a brief presentation on this item. Jo, thank you very much.
In Victoria Market, People's Panel, for your consideration this evening. Reflecting a commitment to give traders, customers and the community a greater say in the delivery of the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program, the City of Melbourne appointed the People's Panel. The purpose of the People's Panel was to deliberate on the provision of market infrastructure and car parking, addressing the challenges faced by Queen Victoria Market and ensuring a diversity of voices were heard. The People's Panel process has involved a diverse group of 40 people representing traders, customers, residents and invited stakeholders, all with a keen interest in and passion for the market. An independent process and to select panel members, a clear remit with agreed principles by the People's Panel, a broad range of information to support the panel's deliberations, opportunities for the panel to request more time for their deliberations, access to state government agencies and experts, expert deliberative engagement facilitators in the form of Mosaic Lab, and the process was entirely overseen by OCM probity auditors to ensure the integrity of the panel process. Over the course of the 6 workshops in total, the panel considered information, evidence and expert input to assist with their deliberations on how to deliver much-needed infrastructure and facilities, including customer amenities and trader requirements such as storage, delivery areas and waste management. At the final workshop, a report outlining 14 recommendations was developed. A minority report was also prepared. And shortly, you'll hear from three panel participants who will speak to you about their report. The management report before you includes an initial assessment of the People's Panel report. The panel has recommended that some market infrastructure and amenities could be delivered through a redeveloped G-shed, which is that facility currently between the Meat Hall and H-shed. And also the Southern Development site could be used to deliver much needed operational infrastructure. In addition to supporting the 14 recommendations, the minority report also recommends Council investigate options for using Queen Street for the provision of market infrastructure and car parking. In terms of car parking, the People's Panel recommended 500 car parks be delivered through the Munro site, which is currently under construction, and 500 car parks be maintained on the current at-grade market car park, with the remainder of the land repurposed for public space. The report further recommends the potential inclusion of car parking as part of the future redevelopment of the Southern Development site. Importantly, the People's Panel report reinforced many aspects of the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Master Plan, including the restoration of the heritage sheds, weather protection, necessary upgrades to the food court, the need for more public spaces around the market, the Munro development, the future Queen's Corner business, and the Southern Development site. Of the 14 recommendations, 7 are recommended by management this evening to immediately move forward. 4 are supported in principle, subject to further investigation, and 3 are operational issues, which are also supported in principle by management and are recommended to be forwarded to the Board of Queen Victoria Market for consideration. The minority report is also recommended for further investigation. The Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program team would like to acknowledge each and every member of the People's Panel for their time and commitment to the process and for working together to deliver an outcome. I commend the management report to you this evening, and I'd now like to introduce 3 members of the People's Panel, Mary Lou Howie, Janice Crosswhite, and Leah Moore, to speak to you about the People's Panel process and findings. Thank you.
Thanks, Jo. We've got one question of Jo. Jo.
Thank you, Jo. If you wouldn't mind, I need a bit more clarification on this minority report, because I noticed that you referred to this auditing process or auditor company. How will that factor into the investigation you mentioned just as you left?
Thank you, Councillor Watts, for your question. The minority report, all deliberative engagement processes include the opportunity to prepare a minority report. So this was a process which was known to the People's Panel from the outset of the process. As part of the deliberations on the evening of the final workshop, time was allocated to a minority group to prepare a report outside of that workshop. That report has been prepared. There have been no identified probity issues around the preparation of that report.
The auditing body won't be engaged in the investigation of the minority report ongoing then?
No, that is correct, Councillor. Thank you.
Thanks, Jo. Okay, who are we hearing from first? Thank you so much. Please come up. And Janice, if you could just state your name for the record, that would be fantastic.
Janice Crosswhite. Good evening, everyone. On behalf of all the members of the People's Panel, we're very pleased and somewhat proud to present the majority report of 14 recommendations to deliver facilities and infrastructure to ensure the Queen Victoria Market has a viable and flourishing future. Our thanks to the Lord Mayor, all councillors and staff, for the opportunity to participate in this type of participatory democracy. The process is certainly one of consideration of a wide range of views and compromise, respecting diverse opinions and backgrounds to reach the 80% required to agree on one recommendation. Our panel was made up of 40 traders, shoppers, residents and stakeholders, all very passionate about the future of the market. And I need to say, not everyone got what they wanted out of the people's panel. But in the time available, the majority report had support of more than 80% of panel members. I'm actually a 7:30 a.m. shopper on Thursday mornings, using my shopping trolley to buy the week's provisions. I'm back at our farm by about 9:30 to let out the chooks, feed the cows, unload the ute and my shopping, and also the extra boxes of cabbage leaves and collie leaves that I get from the traders in usually aisles A and B. The recycled cow food comes from my friendly and cooperative traders, and this is just one part of my Vic market experience that I value and enjoy. There's not a lot of time for us to comment, the three of us, on each recommendation, but I'll make a few. Although outside of our remit, we want to see better weather protection for traders and shoppers. And the Mayor did say everything was on the table. Speaking to recommendation 5 about developing G-Shed for various infrastructure needs, this is a no-brainer for all the reasons we've listed. Recommendation 8 and 9 are in similar themes, providing appropriate and planned recreational spaces in Queen Street and using Queen Street to better connect the front and back of the market. The minority report certainly covers more of possibilities for Queen Street. In conclusion, the market needs some bold renewal and changes to keep it viable in the 21st century. Our recommendations are what we consider to be essential and doable in the short term to advance the market's viability. We believe that this report shows a pathway and directions for renewal of works that can be started in 2019. I'm happy to take questions and we're pleased to be involved in further engagement as the renewal process develops.
Janice, thank you, and very well timed. What we might do is hear from the three reps from the People's Panel, and then we can see if councillors have any questions. That would be fantastic. Who's next? Leah, you next? Thanks, Leah.
Good evening, Lord Mayor, councillors, and members of the public. Thank you for allowing us to present our panel report. Congratulations, Sally, and thank you for creating the People's Panel, hopefully enabling our ideas to be heard and articulated and actioned. One of the biggest issues in the car park, or at least 500 car parks, are to stay at the top end of the current car park. This is paramount for the upper market to survive, as this allows for a natural flow of the traffic and pedestrians through the market. It also needs to include parking for large trucks, as they won't fit in Munro's, and Heritage have rejected digging under A and D sheds. An easy to access and find parking area for tourist buses and vehicles was also mentioned to be put into the current car park. Also, fencing it off would incorporate the OH&S issues around people being around car parks and vehicles. In the future, this area can be repurposed into more parkland if it isn't being used effectively. The main thing is we need to keep the car park where it is, or at least a portion of it, especially at the top end of the market. If we don't have the car park there, the top end of the market will definitely die. Customer comfort as well as storeholder comfort needs to be taken into account as more weather extremes are occurring. This is why the Peel Street side, Stringbean Alley, F Shed, and the alley between Victoria Street shops and also through to A and E sheds needs to be covered and weatherproofed. We're seeing more and more weather extremes, as I've just said, and a lot of the shoppers are finding it hard, especially in F Shed and Stringbean Alley, to walk between the shops. And therefore, the shops that are in F Shed and Stringbean Alley are losing customers because people don't want to walk between the rain, don't want to walk in the rain. And we're finding with the heat at the moment, with the sheds being fenced in more with the shipping containers, the sheds are heating up. So air ducts or something that's going to create more airflow into the market is needed urgently, as we are suffering in the heat, as we found out on Friday. And that's it. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Leah. That's great. Mary Lou, thank you.
Lord Mayor and councillors, this moment to present you is very short, so I do intend to be direct. The future of our market is obviously at a crossroad. The 14 majority recommendations that have emerged through a lot of hard work by the panel and commented by Janice and Leah just now are all worthy. Many are urgent and very doable. Importantly, the recommendations also provide some alternative ways of viewing the market's renewal. And I would like to, at this point, acknowledge the leadership of the Lord Mayor in convening the People's Panel and keeping an open mind. Thank you. However, the People's Panel is not really the main game. Therefore, I want to recap and make a couple of main points about the context in which the People's Panel took place. Firstly, despite the outcomes of the workshops, there has been and still is significant community and trader disquiet about the master plan. Livelihoods are at stake here. From the outset, the Council's QVM proposal has been recognised by experts especially as excessive, disruptive and unnecessarily costly. This proposal would destroy the value of QVM as an authentic working market and as Melbourne's number one tourist destination. Hence, the market community has actively opposed it. Secondly, the state's principal heritage agency refused the council's application, not only on heritage grounds, but more significantly, discredited the city's business case. And by the way, without community pressure, the Heritage Victoria report would not have seen the light of day. Finally, we all want the best for the market precinct. But until there is a genuine willingness by council to revise the plans for QVM or indeed create an entirely new brief, progress will be elusive. Right now, senior management give every indication of clinging on to the master plan with a white-knuckled grip. To be fair, there are several years of planning at stake. Careers and reputations do rest on the outcome, but this doesn't make it right. In conclusion, the panel's work is a good start in altering direction and producing a plan that is incremental, heritage-sensitive and economically viable. To that end, the community, traders and unions need to be involved to help progress this project to ensure vibrant, flourishing working market. Thank you.
Mary Lou, thank you, and thanks to all of the speakers from the People's Panel, and not least of which is so articulately doing that within the three-minute time frame. So thank you very much. I'm going to ask councillors at this point if we have any questions before we hear from our next submitter. Any questions for the representatives of the People's Panel? Councillor Rees and then Councillor Watts. Councillor Rees.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. I'm sure this question could be answered equally well by any of our submitters this evening, but Janice, I might call on you to talk to it. I was very interested to read the minority report, and I thought there were some recommendations there relating to Queen Street, which seemed quite sensible to me, certainly deserving of further investigation. I'm just wondering if you can explain to us why those recommendations only have the status of a minority report. I understand there's a supermajority required. That's a very high threshold to get over. But I'm just interested for your take on that and any of the dynamics that you want to share with us.
In the time you have available to do the tabulation on each recommendation, we had up on the screen the columns of I love it, I like it, I can live with it, I don't like it and I loathe it. And you have handheld devices and you click and then the majority tabulation goes up on the screen. And it took, you know, 6 meetings for us to get to this on our last night, and we virtually ran out of time to go through all the draft recommendations that we'd put together. And this one never really got worked on to any degree. And that's why it became a minority report. Sometimes some of our recommendations, we might have had 20 minutes, 30 minutes on. So I think what I noticed when I read the minority report, it is often probably viewed in better language because people doing the minority report had 3 days to write it up and could go to other sources and quote, you know, where they've got information from, etc. So I'm not saying it should be discounted, but all those people who worked on the minority report also worked on the majority report. So the majority report had everyone's involvement to get over the 80%. Sometimes we had recommendations that we'd workshopped and they counted up between 60 and 80%. So we kept them up on the screen and then we'd rework them. And it may be that we could take out some words or we could add some words to get to the 80% to get it across the line. And one person's vote actually counted for 3%. So sometimes we had something in the 70s. You only knew 2 or 3 people that you negotiated with to get it across the line to make it a recommendation. So that just took a lot of time. And that's why I think I live in Neilimbik Shire. They've just gone through the same process with the Green Wedge Management Plan. There was a major minority report there too. And it looked the same as ours. People could spend a lot more time. They had the 3 days and nights to work on a final report. So they're often not discounted. But that is the Mosaic Lab process that we all knew before we started. Yeah.
Councillor Watts.
I actually think it might be an officer question I have, if I may. I noticed the disquiet around the continual use of the master plan as though it's... there are elements within the... reassure me that there are elements within the master plan which align with the recommendations from the People's Panel. And yet, I guess the disquiet, I'm imagining the disquiet is emerging because the master plan was directed at achieving an outcome which is no longer where we're going. So how can we reconcile, or how can we reassure those who've worked so hard at the People's Panel, the master plan in its original form cannot happen, that there are elements that can happen, but in a broader sense, it is no longer on the table?
Thank you for your question, Councillor. Councillors may recall that the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Master Plan comprises a range of projects, and these were further reinforced in the implementation framework. So the renewal program actually comprises 13 packages of work, and those 13 packages of work are broken down into 46 individual projects to be delivered across the market, originally envisaged to be across a 5-year timeframe. So the provision of market infrastructure, so that infrastructure that addresses storage, how deliveries and logistics are going to occur at the market, is one of 13 packages of work which is identified under the master plan and the implementation framework. Having said that, the provision of market infrastructure is one of the more substantive packages of work, so I don't want to dismiss its importance, but there are many other elements that are still relevant within the master plan. And the People's Panel have actually identified those. One of the key elements of the master plan was always about the restoration of the heritage sheds, and that is a commitment that we have pursuant to the state agreement as well. More public open space around the market, and that is something that has come through in the People's Panel as well. Upgrades to the Dally Hall, Meat Hall, Fish Hall, the restoration of the Victoria Street and Elizabeth Street terraces are all still essentially live. I think you'll see in the People's Panel report also that one of the recommendations is around greater recreation and pedestrianisation of Queen Street, which was always an element of the master plan as well, the Market Cross and the enhanced pedestrianisation of Queen and Ferry Street. So notwithstanding the recommendations in the People's Panel report around market infrastructure and car parking, there are many, many elements of the master plan which still remain valid and relevant. And all of the work that has occurred over the last 5 years and the reports that have been developed still remain very relevant and valid. Thank you.
Councillors, at this point, good. I'm now going to thank you, everyone, for responding to those questions. I'm now calling on Ray Cowling to come and make his presentation to the committee. Ray, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I would like to ask the committee ask management to include some of these suggestions as possible solutions to parts of the panel's report. Consider Munro Car Park. With 500 cars coming along, if we think about the 500 cars that are coming, along here, which is very much a pedestrian part of the market, we would have one car entering about every 14 seconds, we'd have about four cars in that area. If we could underground that part of Queen and Therry Street alongside the Munro building, we'd make the streets pedestrian friendly, we'd make it easier for people to access the parking. Who wants to dodge the pedestrians in that area to get into the underground car park? And it would be cheaper to dig there while the Munro building's going on, because not all of the Munro boundary has to be retained. And that would give you the opportunity even for more than one access to the Munro building. It would also give you a little more retail space in Therry Street. The panel emphasised maximising at-grade car parking, but this was going to mean we had a smaller amount of open space and it would be flat open space. It would not be very interesting. So let's think about Fed Square. What makes it a success? I suggest there are five things. It's elevated. We all love to climb up high and look down. It's valley shaped. It's not flat. That's important to us. It's part of our way of looking at things. So we could have there is in the UK a website which talks about building another level of car park on an existing car park without need for foundations. We could use that, instead of building another level of car park, we could use that to create an open space. So the red square is where the open space would be at an elevated level, or the red rectangle, and from the red rectangle to M Shed would be the slope that would be too low for parked cars. I've obviously run out of time. Can I please ask for an extension of time, Lord Mayor? 1 minute. Please.
Go for it. And we have all got your submission as well, Ray. So we've got the detail, but 1 minute, let's go for it.
Right. Okay. So the green there is a walkway to give continuity from that open space over to here. There'd be cafes along the top up here. And also, Franklin Street doesn't need to be north of that shed. If we think what's happened since then, there's much less emphasis on cars in the city. We only have one lane of traffic going down here into the city. So we could move Franklin Street to the south of the sheds, so the sheds open onto the street. And then you get a much simpler and easier path into Peel Street. And you still need the roundabout there to slow traffic down before it gets into the city. And that gives you an extra 100 car parks in this last block here because you're not using it for a street. That's enough. As you say, you have the sheet.
Ray, thank you. And thank you for coming. And I think your presentation's been well received even though there is a time limit. So thank you very much. Councillors, are there any questions for Ray? No, thank you. Thanks, Dane. Well, councillors, I'm going to move the motion that is coming up on the screen, which is long and has been scribbled over today. But I'm moving this motion and I'm calling on a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Rees, thank you very much. As the mover, I'm going to speak to the motion. If we keep going down a bit further, you'll see what we've done with that. But look, before we get into that detail, firstly, I would like to thank everyone, the 40 people involved in the People's Panel who took part and brought with them their fresh momentum, their lived experience and their practical insights for plans for Queen Victoria Market. All of you are intimately connected to the market and committed to its future, and we appreciate that. As traders, customers and subject matter experts, it's important that your voices were heard. Thank you for coming together in good faith, for sharing diverse points of view and for working so hard, including extra meetings and really being frank and fearless in your inputs, so that we could get to a point of finding some common ground, for identifying new ideas and for really bringing us to this point this evening. So tonight we are here to consider your recommendations. The People's Panel has reinforced support for renewing QVM in so many different ways. Management has a huge amount of data, research, reports, and really this People's Panel report to consider in relation to the recommendations it will bring back in the first quarter next year. As many of you know, construction is already underway at Queen Victoria Market on the Munro site. This will be the community services hub that is much sought after. And right there on the market's doorstep, there will be childcare and family health services. There will be 56 affordable housing units, a hotel, 320 apartments and 500 underground car spaces, already approved and started. Furthermore, we know that that we have been preparing for on-site restoration of the heritage sheds, and that includes maintenance works that have been fast-tracked, greening and activation across the market, and improvement works at Elizabeth Street. Tonight's report and recommendations from the People's Panel, if supported, enables us to move forward in the work that we want to undertake at this iconic and much-loved site, the Queen Victoria Market. It gives us an opportunity to move more quickly with a fresh mandate, and it brings to us other aspects of work to refresh and renew the market, and for that we're very grateful. As we consider the People's Panel report, I think it's important to be clear and just to make sure that we've set the context for really when and why the renewal plans went on hold in the first place. Back in March, Heritage Victoria refused our permit to build a basement car park and facilities under Heritage Sheds A to D. And Council decided at that point not to appeal. That's the point at which the redevelopment came to a stop. That part particularly went on hold. It was unexpected and disappointing for many at Council after hard years of work and good endeavour and good intention, and I think that's worth acknowledging. The People's Panel has given us an opportunity to find that compromise between the work that had been done and the work that the traders, shoppers and subject matter experts felt were important for us to consider going forward. As we know, a majority of councillors decided not to go ahead with an appeal because at the time it was regarded that it would have created more delay and more cost potentially for no forward-looking result. I look back at that debate and found the following observation was made at the time, and it was this quote: "Council is not interested in picking a fight with a statutory authority, spending ratepayer resources, and potentially not reaching an outcome that we desire anyway." End of quote. And that scenario has not changed. Instead, in August, we voted as a council to go to the people. This was not an easy choice, nor was it an easy process, as has been reflected tonight. Critics said consultation was a waste of time. I would like to say that consulting with the people directly involved, that is, in our case, the traders and the customers, is never, ever a waste of time. The People's Panel has been an important and useful step in this process. Instead of a long, costly legal appeal stalling our project, we have quickly found another path forward with good recommendations to work with. There's now a greater understanding amongst a broader group of the complexities of the Queen Victoria Market site, more community goodwill towards the project, and I believe a much stronger working relationship amongst those who are passionate about the market, those particularly who are closely connected to the market. Together, we're ready to reconfigure the plan. Even where the panel felt it couldn't address certain questions, where comments were made such as, well, we're not engineers or architects, we don't have the expertise to answer these questions, I think that it's made it clearer for our management team and councillors to understand where we can add that expertise. And for that, we're also grateful. Given that the proposed basement car park was rejected by Heritage Victoria, we now have other options to explore for facilities and for a car park. What changes from the original plans is very much about the how we go about delivering facilities and where we can do that. We have suggested a motion here tonight that acknowledges that we want parking, which is just so important to traders and shoppers. But we're also acknowledging with this change that the open space is important and that it is important for the community around the market, but also to the broader Melbourne community in relation to broader plans that we have here at the City of Melbourne in relation to open space. I think we can take Leah's comments on board this evening, and we've very much tried to reflect that in the way of the motion referring to those car parks remaining whilst alternatives are found, and then as transition is undertaken, we can look to create that open space that can benefit the community. I also note the desire around comments and observations on scale and stages to be able to avoid disruption to the function of the market for traders and shoppers, but also for our visitors, and those comments were reflected in the debate this evening. For all of those reasons, I'm happy to put this motion this evening, and I'm looking forward to comments from our seconder and the debate that will follow. Councillor Reese, the seconder to this motion, I am looking to you to make some comments.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. I'm very happy to second the motion that has appeared up on the screen. Can I also begin by thanking the participants in the People's Panel process? I think all councillors would commend your commitment to the future of the market and giving up your time as you did to spend so many hours. Sounds like you could have spent even more hours working through the proposal, but thank you so much for putting hours for what it's worth. We also have spent many, many, many hours looking at this development proposal. I think it's very easy for us to talk for a long time about the things we don't agree upon about the QVM development, and most of the time that we talk about this tends to be consumed by the points of disagreement, and you can very easily lose perspective, I think, because of that. The fact is that I think most of the people in this room agree in large part with what has been proposed at the QVM development. As Joe reminded us this evening, we're talking here about 13 separate packages of works and 46 projects, and certainly I think this council group support the majority of those. I think the report that's been produced by the People's Panel is very, very valuable. It's given us a series of recommendations. It's imbued with common sense, and it will give, I think, new energy to the project going forward and provides us with a practical way forward on a number of fronts. I also concur with the comments of the Lord Mayor about heritage. The fact is that we ran into a heritage brick wall on this project earlier this year, and that is late last year it was, and that is a reality which we've been working through in 2018. That's life. The way you deal with these things is the measure of the organisation, and we are finding a way forward, and the People's Panel has been very, very useful in allowing us to do that. I also would like to comment briefly on a number of specific aspects in the recommendations. I did find the minority report quite interesting. I thought some of the recommendations they made, particularly around Queen Street, deserve further investigation, given the constraints of the G-Shed, given the proximity of Queen Street to so much of the trading activity at the QVM. I think that Queen Street proposal deserves further investigation. I also think that the point that's been made by Leah and others around the car spots, I think the points you make about tourist buses and logistics drop-offs are true. I also think that as a long-term ambition for the QVM, having a large car park at grade is not something that should be part of the long-term future of QVM. And I make the observation that I can't think of too many cities in the world where they have a car park of that size, notwithstanding the very good points that have been made about logistics, tourism and so on. So with making those points, I very much endorse the recommendations on the screen.
Thank you. Now, yes, Councillor Wood.
Just a question of officers. Just to follow up on a point that was made there, did we in the 5 years of the project look at Queen Street as an option, and what did we find with that option?
Through you, Lord Mayor. We did look at, that was one of many options that we looked at. The issues around Queen Street at that stage were that the actual footprint that you would be digging under is long and narrow. To get vehicles down there and run the length of Queen Street and then exit supposedly at Victoria Street, you would be building a lot of space for driveways and not a lot of space for storage. It's also an area where there are a lot of services. So on that basis, while it is possible, it wasn't at that time considered to be the most viable option to look at, and also not the most efficient in terms of the space you could use, hence the reason it landed where it did.
Have a question from Councillor Watts. For Rob as well.
To Professor Adams, if that's all right. Is it not the case that in some places in the world, car parks actually can be an urban design solution can be made to a car park to have it both useful as green space as well as a car park, intermittent use as a public space for recreation, intermittent use as a car park? There are treatments, aren't there?
I think you'll find around the world there will be spaces that, for instance, sit under a tree canopy that act as a car park during some times of the day, but might be used for other uses for other parts of the day. Yes, I think certainly those spaces do exist.
Thank you.
Councillors, just to note, we're not necessarily approving solutions tonight, the investigation of solutions. So thank you. Councillor Louis, did you have a question?
Just a quick one, Lord Mayor, thank you. Mine's probably a little bit pedantic, probably maybe the wording. I'm just concerned about the word investigate, 500 car parks in front of Munro. We can confirm that there's definitely 500 car parks in Munro. And that's going to be... There won't be any changes to it.
There are definitely 500 car parking spaces in Munro, and that is a contract that has actually been signed and is about to be executed.
I'm just concerned about the word investigate. I was just wondering whether it'd be more...
Clumsy. If we cross out the 500 car parks in Munro and just put plus. Councillor Louis? In addition to. Good.
In addition to the 500 car parks in Munro, investigate an additional 500 car parks in the precinct. I think that's the meaning.
That's what's intended.
I think that was
thanks, Councillor Louis. Yes, that was the intention. Thank you. Drafting updates are always appreciated. Councillor Watts.
An additional.
This is the first time we've seen this particular clause, and so I'm going to worry about semantics too. I would like a little more explanation around the transitional business there, because is the community going to be consulted again around at what point transition can occur or not occur? And how will we...
And Councillor Watts, yes, I think you might have missed one of the presentations we had from Rob.
I think there are a couple of pieces of information around this. There's an agreement with the state government that the car park will eventually go to open space. And on the basis of that, the southern site becomes available. So the idea that you will get a transition whereby part of that is taken away and car parking remains there until the completion of the southern site is a viable option, and that is the one that is, would be pursued out of this recommendation. So that is the one. Yeah, it's a staging and a transition, really, before we get to a total open space.
Thanks, Rob. Any other speakers to this motion tonight? Councillor Lippitt.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Thank you for letting me go next, just in case I keel over, and sorry for missing some of your opening remarks. Thank you very much to Rob, Joe and team, to Mosaic Lab for running an independent process, but most importantly of all, to our hardworking People's Panel members who came in no matter the circumstances and had a really, really detailed, in-depth discussion to help put together the recommendations that we're receiving tonight. And I'm excited that we have got such a comprehensive report that's considered so many different issues, not necessarily all the issues that were asked to be considered up front. The scope might have expanded a little bit, but I think it's a good indication of what that cross-section of traders and the community reps and others and expert opinion makers as well thought about various issues. And the more information we have, the better it is to know that when we do make decisions about what the changes to the master plan should be, if there are, or what direction should be taken in future, that we have as much information as possible. So I really want to thank all of the members of the People's Panel. It's not just a representative workshop to find a solution. We all know that the People's Panel is also a political mechanism. It's a political circuit breaker. There are as many opinions on Queen Victoria Market as there are traders, visitors, shoppers, Melburnians, Victorians, anyone who's ever been there, right? I've said it before, but I can't think of anywhere else in Victoria that has more emotional connection to place than somewhere like Queen Victoria Market. So I think the process was necessary. And to clarify an earlier issue, of course we don't go into this process and then say, that's nice, but the master plan's the master plan and we're going to keep going. Obviously, there are aspects of the master plan that can't be pursued based on the new political direction and the head of steam that's been built up by the People's Panel report, if I can put it that way. I just want to laud the independence of the People's Panel as well. I noted that the scope changed, and that's a decision of the participants working under the facilitation of Mosaic Lab, and I thank them for keeping everyone in the tent and allowing those deliberative discussions to keep evolving. That was a very interesting process, and I thank everyone for staying involved throughout it. Like Councillor Rees and the Lord Mayor, I find some of the recommendations immediately palatable, exciting. I just want to get on with it. A lot of them were things that we were planning to do anyway based on previous council resolutions. Some of them are very different, but we knew that we were going to get some of those, particularly around car parking and where to go underground, if to go underground, where to put storage, the extent of storage. But today is about receiving the report. It's not about saying, yes, we agree to every recommendation and therefore it will be so. We still have to cost these things. We still have to determine a cost-benefit analysis of everything. But what we're doing today is agreeing in principle to absolutely everything that we can and asking for a report back in February from management so that we can figure out how many of these recommendations we can pursue, what's the most cost-effective thing for our ratepayers going forward, what the most sustainable thing is, and of course, above all, how to ensure that the market is profitable going forward. We all love the heritage, the theatre, the grittiness of the place, but of course the market must be a profitable place as well, and we remember that that was the originating purpose of the market renewal many, many years ago. I am very interested that there's a big no to under A to D sheds. We have to remember that Heritage Victoria has knocked us back, and whilst I do think that changes to that application would have potentially got a different result in future, the planning minister can call in any heritage application at any time and determine it himself. This is a political process just as much as it is a technical process. We need to be realistic about what the community expects from us. I think the community, the traders, expect that we need to look at other options, and I'm glad that the People's Panel report has looked at that. We've already talked a little bit about the minority report. It's a very significant minority. I think it is appropriate that we investigate it, and I thank the presenters for all the extra information on that. I had the privilege of sitting in the making of the recommendations right at the end because the Lord Mayor wasn't available, and I had the honour on behalf of Council to receive the majority report. And the making of those recommendations in the last couple of hours was a fascinating process. Many recommendations in the 70-75% mark didn't quite make it to the majority report. Many of them are discussed in the minority report, and I think we do have to give it some weight. The extent to which you give it weight is, of course, a question that everyone might come to a different answer on, but we do need to give it some weight. And finally, on the park, I thank the Lord Mayor for proposing the words in a slightly different way. I was in favour of the new 11.4.1, and I think that the point to make here isn't pro-car park, anti-car park, pro-park, anti-park. We're trying to come up with a solution that's going to make the market profitable for generations to come. The population immediately around the market is going to more than double by 2041. The suburb of West Melbourne, if current planning controls stay in place and market conditions stay in place, will more than triple by 2041. We are running out of open space, and we don't know what the landscape's going to be in 10 years' time in terms of car ownership, in terms of modal shifts from different types of transport, and it would be foolish, I think, to lock ourselves in now to a set number of car parks forevermore. And that's where I had a little bit of difficulty on recommendation three, because one reading of it is it is transitional, another reading of it is that it's permanent. But here and now, I think we should just indicate that we are keeping this question open a little bit because we shouldn't be locking our ratepayers into a particular solution that we haven't quite yet costed. February will, or March or April, the first quarter report in 2019 will be such an important moment as well. Today we're receiving the report. Now we need to cost it. Now we need to do a cost-benefit analysis of what these various changes to the master plan might result in. So thank you, Lord Mayor, for the amended motion. I just want to close again by thanking the People's Panel members. It's been quite a remarkable process. This is a difficult political process, but thank you for being involved and having a taste of what it's like to have been a councillor for the last 6.5 years. Thank you all.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Are there any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Watts.
Yes, I have mixed feelings about all of this. As I said, I'm listening very closely to the way in which the bottom line, pardon the pun, the bottom line is making sure this market is viable. And I fear that which we've been speaking about and putting out there for consultation and creating a very unsettled environment for our market has contributed to the alarm, the edgy point we are now, which means we have to be very careful not to thwart our traders more than we need to. That is why I just asked the question before about how engaged they're going to be when the transition occurs. I am not as confident that the City of Melbourne councillors or officers understand the trading environment as closely as the traders, and therefore we really have to pay close attention to what they're on about. We don't know about open space requirements. We can speculate. We don't know about the shape of the city definitively in relation to car usage, but what we do know is traders know what business is. So as long as we keep listening and not race ahead with planning which has resulted in this uncertainty, I think we'll be better off. So by and large, it seems to me the People's Panel has been a wonderful outcome for this market. It has been a very difficult process for a lot of people for a long time, and this was a breakthrough that had to happen, and it seems to me to be a very reasonable outcome. Not ideal, depending on your point of view, but a step forward.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Councillor Wood, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Lord Mayor, and thanks to the People's Panel as well. I don't think we're going to completely agree on everything, but I thank you for your work, the amount of work that you've put in, weekends, trying to get your head around this urban renewal project, which, as Councillor Leppert said, we've been trying to do for some 6.5 years. To Janice, you talked about better weather protection, looking at G-Shed, the recreational spaces in Queen Street, and I agree with Joe that a lot of the points that you've actually made do actually support quite a number of elements of the master plan, quite a number of elements of the other packages of works. Leah talked about 500 car parks should remain where they are. Mary Lou said it's excessive, costly, disruptive, and a plan that is incremental would be preferred. So I think the idea that we have a mandate or a clear and concise pathway forward, even in tonight, has been demonstrated to be difficult because so many people have different perceptions about the market. They have different stories, different ways they engaged, even in childhood, about the market. I just want to look back in history, given some of our submitters tonight have talked about the history, and also some of my colleagues have talked about the history. In March, what we decided to do was to submit a revised application to Heritage Victoria. We had three opportunities before us, if you could call them opportunities. One was to go through the courts. One was to appeal the decision to the Heritage Council, and the third one was to submit a new application. In spite of some councillors wanting to go the appeal route, we found a way forward that we thought was the right way to show that we wanted to work through this process collaboratively. And when we talk about Heritage Victoria, I think the term was hitting a brick wall. I hope it was a heritage brick wall there, Councillor Rees. When we talk about hitting a heritage brick wall, each and every day applicants in all sorts of projects come up against a decision to refuse a permit. So I recognise the position we're in at the moment, having gone through the People's Panel process. But up until a short time ago, we had that opportunity to actually resubmit an application to Heritage Victoria. I think, you know, again, some questions that I'll have when we come back in February, and again, I note Councillor Leppett making the point several times that we're accepting the report this evening, but at the same time, we are also accepting a number of the recommendations which we think we should get on with, and I completely agree with that. So some questions that I'll have in February is what happens to that compelling business case justifying that significant expenditure? So seeing that as it comes back will be important. If the parking is shifted to the southern site, what happens to the financial impact, given we wanted to sell it unencumbered to pay for what is a significant renewal? Will people be happy that the closest car parks are at Munro and at the southern site? What I heard from traders all through the consultation process previously, and there was actually nearly 5 years of consultation, I recognise the importance of the People's Panel, but there was significant consultation, is I heard loud and clear that traders were adamant that car parking needed to stay near the trading area, and that is why the below ground facilities were where they were as much as anything. How much will it cost to investigate some of these other options, Queen Street, G-Shed, and obviously the staged open space delivery? Does that cost us any additional? Will a new disagreement open up when it comes time to remove the car parking? And I think it's good that we've been genuine tonight about our end game is to return 1.5 hectares of open space here. I'm really pleased that colleagues have put that on the table. And the other concern is just about process. To get to the master plan that we got to took 5 years, numerous technical reports, business cases, and the list goes on. I just hope that we have that same rigour when we come to sort of the next 3 or 5 months to determine the way forward for what is a core part of the project. So I can't support the bulk of the motion here tonight, and I would foreshadow should this motion fail. If I could get up on the screen there, just a foreshadowed motion. And what you'll see is it's largely in accordance with the motion that the Lord Mayor has moved with some really key differences. That is that I can't, if I'm being genuine about this, support recommendation 3 around delivery of the open space, because that is a key part of this urban renewal project with the 20,000 residents will be on the doorstep. With 14, again, I've mentioned about the southern site being unencumbered so that we can pay for the project, so I find difficulty in accepting that. The minority report is a hard one for me, because what I see in that minority report is I saw a group of people trying to find a way forward in what were, you know, really tough circumstances with lots of different viewpoints. So the reason that I can't accept the minority report at this stage is because no viable alternative other than to investigate other options is currently before us on the table. And this is the critical thing. We have a master plan with a fully costed delivery, and we now have a Heritage Victoria refusal and a People's Panel report which asks us to look at Queen Street, which asks us to look at a few other options of delivery, but we don't have a shovel ready, independently assessed project that is before us this evening. 11.6 won't surprise too many people. And some people will say, well, hang on a second, Heritage Victoria have refused it, and you've got a planning minister that says he's happy with that. But it should be the right of every proponent to have a process which is not prejudicial. And I don't think after 5 years and one refusal that we gave it our best shot to go back and accept most of the recommendations of the Heritage Victoria report that didn't impact on the core delivery, the core reason this business case was so lauded, and the delivery of that open space, and that was to take the car parking facilities underneath Queen Victoria Market. And we didn't have the opportunity to explain that you can actually restore the heritage sheds in situ. It's been done all around the world. So that is why this is here. I hope that in February we can come up with a different way forward. But as it stands, I can't support the current recommendation to completely abandon the project as it stands, the core part of the project, notwithstanding that we have lots of packages of other works that are ongoing. So I want to thank the People's Panel for a serious amount of work. You'll see that the first, you know, few parts of that foreshadowed motion accept some of the great recommendations and great work that, that you've done, and I think we should just get on and do that. And I really wish we had done that about 4 or 5 years ago. And I also hope that you can see that everyone in this room wants to see the Queen Victoria Market sustainable. We just have different ways and different views of thinking that that can be achieved. But again, I thank the People's Panel for all their work.
Thank you, DLM. Did you want to suggest an amendment?
Sorry, I completely forgot. I'd like to suggest an amendment to the mover and seconder of 11.4.4. If you're amenable, I just think as we move forward, given we're in this very open and transparent environment, that making the revised business case public and also the revised gross costs of the total project public are really important to continue and foster that transparent relationship. Thank you for reminding me, Lord Mayor.
So that's an amendment you're putting to us for the first motion.
So the substantive motion, if you're happy motion. To...
So I'm happy to accept that. Second, Councillor Rees, happy to do that. And as Chair of our Finance and Governance portfolio, I would expect no less from you, DLM. Thank you.
On this, Lord Mayor, can I just ask a quick question of clarification? Is this in association with the quarter one report referred to earlier?
Yes.
And I assume management doesn't need any more direction from us to interpret it that way. Okay, thank you.
Clear as mud tonight? Clear. Good. All right, are there any other speakers to the motion this evening? Councillor Riley.
Look, I'm going to sound like a cracked record because I've been down this path for so many years. The one thing that has really bothered me from the first time we heard that Heritage Victoria had refused our application. And I think it was Councillor Philip Liulu and I said, let's go back and have another go. And I'm one of these people that you've got to say no to me 3 times before I believe them. And I'm a good salesperson too. But I just found it just unacceptable that we as a city did not go back and fight the Heritage. I mean, we, as... you know, DLM just said, we had options, but we walked away from it. And I really believe in my heart that we should have another crack at it, even if it is another no. I mean, but we just walked away too quickly. And it took the People's Panel to get the actual report. They wouldn't even give it to us at the City of Melbourne. So I thank you for that, because at least we knew what we were up against. But it was months and months later, it was nearly a year later, that we actually got the report via the People's Panel. I mean, they didn't even have the guts to give it to us. So I find that just not acceptable. So that's one part of this whole thing that has really bothered me. I think our master plan was in good shape and we could have gone ahead without all of this fuss if we had have just been given the right to appeal that case.
Is that a foreshadow of a foreshadow? No, it's a comment. Just wanted to check. Thank you. Any other speakers to the motion? No? Okay. Well, look, as mover of the motion, I get the opportunity just to sum up. I think we all know that we haven't had a shovel-ready project pre the People's Panel because of the barriers that we faced. The People's Panel have put in so much hard work to this and really helped us break through so many issues. And together with Mosaic Labs and really also our management in all the effort they put into making sure reports were available and speakers were available and all those things, all those elements have combined now for us to have a People's Panel report for us to consider tonight in terms of the recommendations being put forward for approval and also those being put forward for further investigation. And I really believe that together... all of those stakeholders, traders, customers, experts, management and experts have given us the opportunity and that momentum to really move forward. So thank you very much to everyone involved and I acknowledge where we are.
We do have a new way forward because in addition to the People's Panel report, we have we still have our management team and their expertise and their knowledge and experience throughout this entire process, which will remain valuable. We have a new QVM trustees governance process, which has five traders to represent the interests of traders as we move forward, both with operations and renewal. And of course, we have our QVM PL management team who are dedicated, the management team led by Stanley Arcos and the board led by Jane Fenton, to the ongoing day-to-day success of the market. So I reckon, goodness me, we've pulled so many components together demonstrating the enormous dedication and commitment that we have to this Queen Victoria market, and we now have an opportunity to actually get on with it. And that is the plan from this evening, should this motion be approved, and I am now going to put it to the vote. All those in favour of this motion, please raise your hands. So we have Councillor Louie, Councillor Watts, Councillor Lilou, Councillor Capp. Oh, I thought that was up. Oh, Councillor Rees, Councillor Oak, Councillor Leppert. That is a majority, but I note that we have dissenting votes, those against, please raise your hands, from Councillor Riley and Deputy Lord Mayor Councillor Wood. Majority in favour of the motion, I declare the motion carried at 6:47 p.m. on the 10th of December 2018. Congratulations to everyone involved. Am I supposed to do something else?
No, you just don't know times and motions.
I know, but I'm just doing it because it's momentous and I think it deserves it. If that's okay, Deputy Lord Mayor. Thank you to everybody. If you would like to leave the meeting at this point, we understand. Thank you for being here. You are welcome to stay for the next item, but thank you very much for joining us this evening. To our reps from the People's Panel, an extra special thanks. Leah, thank you. Mary Lou, thanks. And Janice, sorry. Yes, I have sent an email, Councillor Watts. All right, we're now moving on. Councillors, let's regroup to agenda item 6.2, the Bourke Street Precinct Redevelopment Application for a Planning Permit. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No, thank you. Then I'm going to move this motion. I'm looking for a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Rees, it's a major project, so we're going to run with our, thank you. Councillor Rees is seconding the motion. Thank you, and Councillor Riley, look forward to comments. As mover, I'm going to speak to the motion. We have looked at this project previously, thanks to the team coming in to join us. It is a transformation of this precinct between Little Collins Street and Bourke Street, involving Council House 2 and the Art Deco Heritage Building that was the Commonwealth Bank Building on Bourke Street. I believe this project really sets the bar in terms of leadership around six-star green design as well as built, and something that takes us a step ahead of that wonderful project 12 years ago, which was Council House 2, around sustainability issues in terms of its design and how it will operate. And I applaud the team for that leadership. It will, of course, provide much needed accommodation for our valued staff who are operating in suboptimal conditions at the moment. And I know they will welcome what will be state-of-the-art best offices in town, and they deserve that when it is completed. And the fact that we're creating an environment that will make people happy. And I think that's really important. So that's a major part of this project. Two-thirds of this project is really dedicated to community use, hospitality and retail. And again, I think that shows leadership around what the City of Melbourne can do to really contribute to the public realm. There's provision for an enormous public forum area There's provision, if needed, for our city library to be located there. There is a public garden on the rooftop in which any number of activities to the imagination can be extended, and something, again, that is a leadership in terms of what we're trying to see with our greening our rooftops, both for impact on not just on amenity for our community, but also on the Heat Island effect, as well as better managing stormwater. There's a lot of provision for stormwater. I think others will talk about the other various aspects of the project in that regard. There's a green laneway. There's a new laneway that adds to the very important distinctive nature of Melbourne around laneways, a green facade, and the list goes on. This is an extraordinary project. It is something that will enliven and lead the precinct around there, something that, an area that's very much deserving of investment as well, and will be a fantastic addition to Melbourne CBD. And for those reasons, I'm happy to propose. I look to Councillor Rees as our seconder to make some comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. I'm delighted to be able to second this motion and to speak to it. I do that because this is quite a historic moment in the history of our city. The Melbourne Town Hall, where we're currently sitting, was of course built between 1867 and 1887, and for just on 150 years it has served our city so well, a testimony to the great architecture of Reed and Barnes, and to the former custodians and people of this city who had the foresight to build a building which has stood the test of time so magnificently well. Then I think if you look at Council House 2, just behind us here across Little Collins Street, when it opened back in 2006, it was a truly groundbreaking building, not just in Melbourne but in Australia. It was one of the buildings of the decade, I would say, as one of the first six-star, green-star rated buildings, and really showed Melbourne and Australia what could be done in terms of sustainability and modern building design. And I'm absolutely delighted to be able to say that I think we're going to do it again with this new council house development, which we are endorsing this evening for a planning or application for a planning permit. There is so much to like about this project. You've covered that very, very well, Lord Mayor. I would just add to all of that by saying that I think it's so important that this new building projects to the city, that this is indeed the civic hub of the city, and it's a building which will stand the test of time. And in 150 plus years from now, when you walk down Bourke Street, you'll look over and say, that is the heart of our city, and I want to go into that building and participate in the civic life of this city.
Thanks, Councillor Rees. Are there any other speakers to this motion this evening? Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'm really delighted to support this as well. This project's roughly the same size as the Queen Victoria Market Renewal Project that we were talking about yesterday. So my amendment is to refer this to a people's panel to report back next year. No, I won't do that. I want to thank the Lord Mayor for incorporating the extra words on the City Library. I think we should put on public record... I'll improve my jokes for tomorrow night, Lord Mayor. We should put on the public record that this may well become the site of our City Library. There are other options around, but let's make it explicit in the planning application that part of the public commons may well become the City Library quite soon. We need to keep all of our options on the table. It is the capital city zone, so you can, you know, pick and choose any use you want, but there are other reasons for those words, and I thank the Lord Mayor for incorporating them. I think the most outstanding thing about this that I don't think has been mentioned yet, and I apologise if I've not been listening closely, is that we're not talking about buildings that will be there for 50 years or even 100 years, but hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. The embedded energy in our buildings now is something that we absolutely have to take into the highest consideration when we make decisions like this, and the sustainability measures of this building based on the application that we're going to be lodging, if this is going to be supported tonight, which I'm sure it will, is going to go even further than that record-breaking and pioneering CH1. So that is incredibly exciting. I'm also looking very closely at the Commonwealth Bank building, which of course we refer to as City Village, which is an eclectic mix of uses at the moment, although they're slowly being changed and it's mostly City of Melbourne staff now, which is of course an eclectic mix of uses. And the heritage treatment of that building and giving it some prominence as well is going to make a wonderful civic precinct, as is the welcoming architecture from Bourke Street and Little Collins Street. I'm really delighted to be supporting this, and I hope that the Minister will receive the planning application in favourable light.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Are there any other speakers to this motion this evening? Councillor Watts.
I think it's splendid. I really look forward to the way this will evolve. I think the City of Melbourne, as the state capital and as an internationally renowned city for urban design and an international reputation for knowledge, how important it is that we have something that we can all be excited about, and in the heart of it will be the library, possibly, which is, of course, the best possible investment in the intellectual life of any given city.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Are there any other speakers to this motion this evening? Oh, Councillor Riley.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be approving this new building of Council House One. I do recall many years ago with former Lord Mayor John Soh, and this was proposed by Rob Adams, that we should build a new building for our staff. And it was shockwaves through the media. I mean, why would the City of Melbourne spend so much money on building a building for their staff? And look what he did. It turned it into that six-star fantastic building, which is admired right around the world. So the expectations of this new building, Rob Adams, is that we really would like a seven-star. Go for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Riley. Any other speakers to this motion? No? Then I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. That's unanimous, so I declare that motion carried. Thank you, councillors. I now call on Councillor Rees. Thanks, team. I now call on Councillor Rees to assume the chair of the meeting in relation to the planning general portfolio. Thank you, Councillor Rees.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. Just pause briefly. There is one report from management for consideration under the planning general portfolio that relates to agenda item 6.3, planning permit application TP 2016-858 for the property 58 to 66 Latrobe Street, Melbourne.
Councillor Rees, I am declaring a conflict of interest for this item. It's an indirect interest by virtue of section 78C, which is receipt of an applicable gift by virtue of a campaign donation. And I've been given permission by the Head of Governance to also note that I have a conflict for item 6.4 this evening. It's an indirect interest under section 78C, which is receipt of an applicable gift by virtue of a campaign donation, and because they're consecutive items, logistically it made sense to make those declarations at this time, if that's acceptable to our councillors. And I will...
It certainly is. Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No, I know Officer Jane Birmingham was raring to go, but... Look, there may still yet be time for questions, Jane. I'll now call on... We do have a number of people who requested the opportunity to address the committee. The first of those I'd like to call is Jun Zi, and you who requested the opportunity to speak in relation to this matter. Is Jun Zi here? I hope I have the pronunciation of your name correct.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome to Town Hall. Please speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Yeah, thank you. Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to express our thoughts and concern here. As a long-term resident of 33M, I feel obliged to speak up for my fellow residents. 33M is tightly surrounded by high-rise buildings. The proposed building known as 58 to 66 Latrobe Street is adjacent to 33M. I do hope you could go to the site to take a look. if you approve this and the future planning permit application around it, 33M is going to be constructed on all sides and will make the area extensively crowded with tall residential towers. I live on the eastern side of 33M at level 6 since it was settled in 2012. It used to be a great place to live. The views and the atmosphere of the surrounding neighborhood were part of what I loved about being a resident of 33M. However, these are all gone. After the conservatory was built, we have no direct sunlight, no privacy, no view, but just noise. The ventilation from it continued to produce additional noise due to lack of space between the buildings, and the air clean sounds like a wind cyclone. The sound is so loud that even when all windows and the doors are closed, it is still deafening inside. Senior people and the young students cannot sleep well. Constant and the lack of sunlight makes people feel depressed. Our rooms are cold and most time of the year. Clothes are always wet and smelly. Furniture is also moldy. Grange Place site of 33M will be in the same situation and will be led to serious traffic congestion. The proposed building will share the same land with Grange Place with 33M and potentially with another two buildings in the future, as the entries and exit of the garage, the loading bay, and the garage collection bay of 33M are on the Grange Place. I can't imagine how the Grange Place will look after the proposed building when it is built, not to mention other buildings still in planning. To sum up, if the proposed building is approved, it will inflict severe and irreparable negative impact on the environment of the neighborhood and the well-being of the 33M residents. We sincerely hope that you reject the application. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. I can advise that I have indeed been up and walked the block there on Grange Lane and around. Jane Birmingham, I would appreciate actually if you could just respond to the point made about the impact on of this development on 33M and the surrounding buildings, with particular reference to overshadowing and wind. And noise as well, obviously, with construction.
Thank
management.
You, Councillor Rees. Just in relation to 33M, it actually sits to the north of this site, so there actually won't be any overshadowing impact from this building on 33M. There's also a setback of this tower of 5 metres from that northern boundary, so it gives an adequate separation. 33M was also not directly to the rear, it actually sits to the east, so there's not a direct relationship necessarily. I think the issue of noise is one that relates to construction primarily. One of the recommendations for the permit is to include a construction management plan condition so that council can actually balance the needs of residents and the construction process. In terms of Grange Place and the traffic, there will be increased traffic in that lane as a result of loading and the car access and waste arrangements. But that is the most appropriate place from an urban design point of view, and our traffic experts and waste experts believe that Grange Place can deal with that increased activity. I think that was all. Thank you.
Wind?
Yeah. There's been a wind assessment of the proposal and it won't have any unreasonable impacts on either the public or private realm.
Thank you very much, Jane.
Thank you.
I now call on Jordi Ahn to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome to Melbourne Town Hall.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I fully agree with the previous speaker, that lady, about the pitfalls or bad side of the proposed new building beside existing 33M tower. I'm Andy. I'm the shop owner of the convenience store on the ground floor of 33M. As a shop owner and as a normal rule, I'm supposed to be in favor of the new buildings in the neighborhood because new buildings will bring more traffic of customers. But no, I'm against it. I, like many other students, residents in the neighborhood, I'm fed up with the traffic congestion, the noise, the tower winds, the litters in that area. More business is good, means more money. But there should be a limit. Now, the densely built apartment buildings are having adverse impact on the environment. I just feel it. Our 31-story building, the outstandingly highest in the area in 2012, is going to be surrounded by even higher buildings on all sides. And the spaces between are just a small street, that's Mackenzie Street, and two small laneways. The proposed new building we are talking about is immediately adjacent to our building. What's happening in this area is a small picture of a large Melbourne CBD. Since 2012, when I moved to Melbourne, the then most livable city in the world, skyscrapers have sprung up like mushrooms. Skylines gave way to concrete walls. Sunshine gave way to dazzling glasses. Melbourne is becoming a forest of buildings. Driving and parking become difficult in this city. I understand more buildings means more money and more income for the city. I understand. Yeah, but if Melbourne continues to grow this way, it will get the so-called big city disease. In the end, more money will be spent on curing this disease. Of course, Melbourne needs to develop its economy and accommodate a growing population, but a healthy city should sprawl horizontally instead of growing vertically. Balanced and sustainable development is the key to the life and future of Melbourne. Actually, we all know now Melbourne is facing an oversupply of apartments. The prices for second-hand apartments are going down. Ladies and gentlemen, you are the future Melbourne committee. What you decide today will remold the future for the city and its people. Please refuse it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, and I will certainly respond to many of the very good points you made in that presentation later on. I'll now call on Daniel Susan to speak for no more than 3 minutes. You certainly know the rules in this place. Daniel, welcome back to Town Hall. Sorry, Councillor Louis? Yep, I'm comfortable with that. Councillor, I'm sorry, Daniel. Councillor Louis has a question. Councillor Louis, could you turn your microphone on, please?
Apologies. Grange Place, Jane. Yes. Is it double width? Or I'm just looking at the pictures. It looks like, is it a double width lane? Or,
I'm just looking at the picture on actually. The screen. Daniel, you can answer that. Thank you.
It's been widened by 33M at the lower level, so their loading dock has been set back inside the building line. So it's slightly wider than a single width laneway in the normal course of events, but it's wider again by virtue of the setback on 33M.
That's great. Thank you.
Daniel, I'd invite you to address us on this matter.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor, Chair, Deputy Chair and Councillors. I have with me here Yip from Hable. He's also put in a request to speak tonight, so I've just pulled him up here. I'm going to keep my submission relatively short. I've submitted a written submission to the councillors, and I just wanted to reiterate that we've been through a very long process on this application. It's been an iterative process with the council's planning and urban design departments, as well as the traffic engineers, the waste engineers and others. We've been back and forth. It's been a negotiated process. So it hasn't been a difficult process, but it's been long, and the client's been willing to make those changes in order to address the concerns that have arisen. What we think we've delivered on the site is a very high quality outcome for the building. It's on the back of a decision by the by a tribunal that, to refuse the application, that gave very specific guidance about what we ought to do in order to deliver a project for this site that was acceptable. Just briefly, in response to some of the matters that have been raised in terms of 33M, we do have a 5 metre setback from our northern boundary. We're also only 9 storeys high, where we're directly opposite that part of 33M, within 5 storeys of our eastern boundary. And in addition to that, that tower is set back at that eastern edge, 7 metres in lieu of 5. So you can see that in the plans in front of you. So there's been a real attempt to try and address those interfaces and minimise the scale, very conscious of what's happened around the submitter's properties in terms of other developments that have gone ahead. They're all much taller than us. Even 33M is 3 metres taller than us in real terms, both to the top of the parapet line and to the top of the services. So we're smaller and we're nestling within the scale of development around the area. I'm happy to answer any questions, but I might leave it there.
Are there any questions of councillors for Daniel? No? Okay, in that case, I will call on Kok Ping Yip to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Thanks, Yip, for joining us this evening. Looking forward to your presentation.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Kok Ping Yip from Habo. We are the architects involved on this design. Obviously, looking at the report, we have to say that perhaps there's not a lot of reference images in terms of the design that was put forward for this project. And what I've got here is, if we can scroll to the next page. Oh, thank you. So that was what's in the report. And perhaps just a very quick look on in terms of the architecture design of it. But what the outcome that we are seeing here is has been, as what Daniel has described, a really long process and a very consultative process, which includes the council planners and urban designer. So we have the benefit of having the council urban designer, Andy Fergus, who's been very engaging on this journey with us. And the outcome of this has been rigorous rounds of coordination with him. So I'll perhaps conscious of the time, and we have submitted this package this morning. If there should be any question, I'm happy to take any questions. But just quickly, the key focus of this design, although is to do with a lot to do with the tower at the rear, the client has consciously wanted to upgrade the front existing building to embrace the front portion and to upgrade it to allow more pedestrian-friendly frontage along the ground floor. And as you can see at the base there, and with that, an existing vehicular crossover is eliminated. As part of these upgrades, we have got, you know, fins and, you know, feature fins in a kind of like a mandrain pattern. Moving up the tower, it's got the same kind of language, which in urban designer Andy Fergus' term is like a Katayama kind of pattern. So it was quite rigorously designed with him, and some reference images to show the kind, and balustrade and bay windows to show the kind of quality that we are aiming for. Towards the side would be, you know, bright on light concrete bandings to elaborate the difference between the side of the building and the north and south of the building. And then the podium would be a lot more simpler, but subtle shifting of the facade, again with the same palette. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Yip. Are there any questions for our final speaker? All right then, thank you very much, gentlemen, for those submissions. There is a motion up on the screen, and including a recommendation, which I am happy to move as the chair of planning, and I'm looking for a seconder. Thank you, Councillor Leppert. I will speak briefly to this matter. look, this has been a really, really long journey on this particular site. As was mentioned, I think the first application went in way back in 2013, which is, you know, more than 5 years ago now, and it has been indeed through many iterations, including VCAT decisions. Sounds like you've done a couple of rounds of the kitchen with Andy Fergus and the design team here, and here we are here tonight. Look, I got to start by saying that I certainly share some of the concerns that have been raised by the residents in 33M about what has been happening in this corner of the city. It is a part of the city where you move from the central city zone into a mixed-use zone, so it's a very transitional part of the city. And I can well understand that many people have found themselves living in a part of the city that maybe doesn't have the character that they thought it was going to have when they first moved in there several years ago. We have seen some towers go into that part of the city, like the Aurora Tower there on the corner of Russell and Latrobe Street. How you could go about building a multi-storey car park, which is what you see at the basement of that building for the first couple of stories, immediately opposite one of Melbourne's most beautiful heritage buildings, is complete planning madness to me. But that was a decision which unfortunately was not made here in this forum, but somewhere else by a previous planning minister in a bygone dark era. But we move on from those things, and we can say that with this development that's before us tonight, it has been on a long journey. And look, there are aspects of it which I think are very positive and deserving of note. I do think it is a very positive thing that you are keeping the four-storey building that's facing onto Latrobe. I think it's very positive that you are removing the vehicle crossover on Latrobe Street, which will make the that street much more pedestrian-friendly. As some regular participants in Future Melbourne Committee will know, I'm a great fan of Melbourne's bluestone footpaths, and I'm very pleased to see that we'll be adding some more cut saw bluestone footpath to this part of the city. That's a wonderful thing. Out we will feel good walking on stone in that part of the city. I also think that the 5 metre setback on the east of the building is very sensible. And look, this is a building which has been designed to work in the round. We're not going to see any of those ugly precast concrete featureless walls, which are just hideous and I can't stand when I see when we walk around the city. So this is a building that will work in the round. You know, you could have gone for maximum yield. You didn't. You set it back so it works on all sides. That's a very, very positive thing. I also commend the City of Melbourne officers who have managed through Section 173 to lock in serviced apartments and the lower levels of the building. And I think that will see the building operate to a good standard at those lower levels for years and years to come. And so that's again, a positive thing. The officer's report and the recommendation does require further detail from the applicants on materials, and I will certainly be requesting of officers that be forwarded to me as well, because I do think that we do need to see more detail around the renders and the materials on this application. I think we also need some more detail around Grange Place and just how that new shop is going to work. And so certainly my commitment to some of our other submitters tonight is that we'll be looking very, very closely at that. And then finally, we have made it a condition as well of this planning permit that there be a construction management plan. We have heard loud and clear the complaints of local residents about the noise, the traffic and the disruption in this part of the city. And so, again, we will be looking to work very closely with the applicant around that construction management plan. And I know and I know officers who are here tonight will be very vigilant in ensuring that it is enforced when it comes to being applied. So on that note, I call on Councillor Leppett to add his thoughts.
Thank you, Chair. You've covered the key issues very well, so I'll try not to add to those at all. I have full sympathies with the objectors. This is a part of the City of Melbourne, as the Chair said, that's transitioned just outside the capital city zone, but much more than that, it's an area that doesn't benefit from the new central city built form controls that requires mandatory separations, mandatory podium heights and so on. It also benefits from the transitional arrangements of the better apartment design standards, which means that they don't apply. And so the only key built form policy that applies is the built form outside the capital city zone, is it, or the higher density 2217, someone will tell me what it is in a minute. It's a very discretionary policy, and that means that numerical standards don't come into account as much, and you've got to look at the case law, you've got to look at the precedents, and you have to weigh equitable development very, very heavily. And so we're going to disappoint a lot of people tonight, but that disappointment needs to go back to that unnamed former planning minister who started setting the precedent with buildings like 33M, which doesn't have adequate setbacks to the southern boundary and blocks out the sun from the La Trobe Street towers, and it doesn't have adequate setbacks from Grange Lane either. If the controls in place had done a good job when these towers went up, we would have far fewer problems than the problems we're trying to solve now. Unfortunately, our job isn't to decide whether or not the setbacks and the tower separations are adequate. In my opinion, they're not. Our job is to decide whether or not the application complies with the planning scheme in a very, very discretionary part of the city. Had it been a block further south inside the capital city zone, it would be a different story. But because of where it is, and it's why you've got so many unpredictable massing of buildings in those few blocks there north of La Trobe Street, there's no grounds of refusal here tonight. It would go straight to the tribunal and the tribunal would approve it. We know that more than pretty much any application that comes before us, because it's gone to VCAT already, and VCAT has been quite prescriptive in what the building envelope should be on this site. And the height is slightly less than what VCAT wanted, and the setbacks comply as well, as does the podium height. So we already know that a refusal here would have no effect other than to spend quite a lot of the residents here's cash on a legal team to fight an application that would be doomed to fail. All of that said, the application before us, I think, is a vast improvement on what came before. It is a lot of work has gone into the design. A lot of work's gone into tweaking some of the settings of the tower and the podium and its relationship with the neighbouring buildings and La Trobe Street in particular, and I really, really warmly welcome that. But that's going to be no comfort to those who also live in the same block who have been subjected to one of the world's most discretionary planning systems, and I can only empathise with you.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett. Are there any other speakers for or against the motion? All right, well, in that case, I will put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I'm declaring that carried unanimously. I now call on Councillor Leppett to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the planning heritage portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Rees. I'll just pause for 30 seconds. All right, let's resume. We're now up to the heritage part of the planning portfolio. This is agenda item 6.4, Federation Square Victorian Heritage Register nomination submission. I'm going to move straight on to Chris Thrum, who's requested the opportunity to speak. Chris, you have up to 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Rohan Leppett, councillors, men and women of the Kulin Nation. This is in regards to the Heritage Victoria application for having protection to Heritage Victoria of the Federation Square site. I'd like to thank the council officers, the management, and all the great work that's gone into it. I'd like to thank the Executive Director of Heritage Victoria, Steve Avery, as well, for the time and effort that he's put into this endeavour. I'd like to note the cultural significance of Federation Square in regards to the Kulin Nation and the Wurundjeri tribe and the Boonwurrung tribe and the other tribes in the Kulin Nation. The Tandaram ceremony happens there every year. I've been to it a couple of times now. Councillor Rowan Leppert, I know, was there at the most recent iteration of it. And it's a significant cultural event for the Kulin Nation. Also, too, we've had the Long Walk is held there every year. And it's a very significant moment for Aboriginals, remembering the magnificent effort that Michael Long took to walk to Canberra to talk to the parliamentarians there many years ago. So it has deep resonance for the Aboriginal community. Federation Square, of course, is built for the Centenary of Federation, so it's an important historical location as well. Now, in regards to the argument that it's too young to be sort of placed on the Heritage Register, we can look at precedents of the National Gallery of Victoria, which was constructed in 1968 and was given recognition for the State's Register in 1982, and the Victorian Arts Centre, which was built at the start of 73 and was registered in 82. So we can look at those precedents. When Braxy opened up Federation Square and he looked around at the buildings, he would have seen the tremendous cohesive nature of the architectural design. So that's been noted too in the report. And again, it's like social significance, like I was there when France's citizens were sort of remembering the disaster and the terrorist action in Paris. So it's a tremendous location for cultural significance and social significance. And I support the City of Melbourne and its support of the Heritage Victoria application.
Thank you very much, Chris. Any questions for Chris? No, you can take a seat. Thanks very much. I now call on Felicity Watson on behalf of the National Trust Victoria, who has requested to speak. You know the deal, Felicity. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, councillors, once again. I don't need to tell you how significant the National Trust thinks Federation Square is, because we nominated it to the Register. So it goes without saying that we strongly support the recommendation that's going to Council tonight to support the Executive Director of Heritage Victoria's recommendation that it be included in the Register. And importantly, we believe that the report undertaken by Built Heritage to peer review the Executive Director's recommendation was a really important step and provides very strong justification for the City of Melbourne to move forward in formally supporting the ED recommendation by making a submission to the Heritage Council. And also, very importantly, the report by Built Heritage provides additional information as well as proposed changes to the extent of registration and permit exemptions, which we believe would be of great assistance to the Heritage Council in making its final determination. Because if the Heritage Council does find that it warrants inclusion in the Register, the next very important step is to determine what permit exemptions are appropriate to ensure that Federation Square can continue to operate as our most important cultural centre. And so I think it is also important to note that inclusion in the Register would not necessarily prevent change and new development at Federation Square. Rather, it would ensure that any proposed changes must consider the site's architectural, aesthetic and cultural values. And I think that Council has already agreed that a master plan for Federation Square is warranted. And we believe that the preparation of a conservation management plan as part of any registration would be a really beneficial sort of management document in terms of moving forward and recognising Federation Square's values. We we also recognise the recommendation in the report to recognise the Aboriginal cultural heritage values of Federation Square, and we agree that this is a really important part of Federation Square's significance. And we would recommend that moving forward, if council is going to put a submission on that to the Heritage Council, that further consultation is undertaken with traditional owner groups and potentially expert advice is sought as well to support the inclusion of those values in the registration. So in summary, strongly recommend the report, the recommendations that are going to you this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Felicity. I would have thought so. Any questions for Felicity Watson? Deputy Lord Mayor? Oh, no, a question for officers. I beg your pardon. Thank you. You can take a seat. Who have we got? Emma and or Tanya, please. After the question.
I thought Dean was going to answer this question. I'm not sure. This might be a tough one, so I'm happy if you take it on notice, and I regret not asking it prior to the meeting because it's not my normal way to put you on the spot like that. How many of these sort of types supporting a submission like this would we have done in sort of the last year or so? And is it normal practice for us to support a submission?
Deputy Lord Mayor, I'm going to take that on notice, but I think the significance of Federation Square and the process that we've gone to getting independent advice was to give management the best, you know, give us the best opportunity to then give a recommendation to you. So we've taken, we've taken a process here, but we have we put anything else to the VHR in the last little while? So in the last 18 months, not so.
Any other questions? No? I'm going to move the motion that appears on the screen. It's the recommendation for management. And thank you, Councillor Rees, for seconding it. Who says a council report can't be beautiful? Every word is perfectly placed. I love being here right now. I didn't earlier, but this is a wonderful report. I want to thank officers for commissioning it. I want to thank officers for presenting it to this committee. And I thoroughly welcome it. But much more than that, I want to thank the National Trust for putting in the application in the first place. As we know, Heritage Victoria's agreed in principle that this needs to be explored further, and the Heritage Council will decide whether or not to list the building. And as Melbourne's premier civic meeting space, and a space that the City of Melbourne has a very, very active involvement in, we're still obliged to pay to clean it. But we do so much more than that. We fund events there. We participate in events there. And with the closure of City Square in recent times due to Metro, it is the front yard of our city as well. So it is only appropriate that we take a position on it. I imagine that it might have been ever so slightly difficult had a recommendation come up to us without a level of external consultant advice. But the external consultant advice is very strong, and I welcome that and the choice to go down that particular road. So I thank officers. But as I said, I really want to thank the National Trust. It is a new building. The elements of Federation Square, which is a campus design, of course, which adds so much to the value of the place. These buildings are only 15 years old. I remind everyone, though, that the Opera House, I think, was nominated for state heritage listing the moment it was opened. And so there's precedent here. It's a different state, of course. But I think that age isn't the only thing to consider here. Heritage is about what we value as a community and what we want to leave for future generations. That means scarcity is a much more important value than beauty. And it's more important in this circumstance than age. And as I've said in this forum and previous occasions, I, of course, do believe that Federation Square, as a significant cultural place with significant social heritage values and architectural values, it absolutely warrants a presence on the Victorian Heritage Register. The report that's come before us backs that up entirely, and it's even gone further than the nomination that the National Trust has put in. I think the suggestions about adding more detail into the statements of significance and one of the key criteria there to make sure that Aboriginal cultural heritage is properly valued in the citation when I trust it will be made is so important. And I thank officers for commissioning this report that's actually going to improve the planning outcomes for the city going forward by adding such valuable information into a hopefully future VHR citation. Councillor Rees.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard, and thank you to our submitters tonight. Chris Thrum, thank you for reminding us of the opening of Fed Square with Braxy. I've been sadly around this city long enough now to actually have been working for Braxy at the time of the construction of Federation Square and the great debate that Melbourne had about the Shard and all the controversy around that, and the fact that I've now sitting here considering a heritage application for a project which I was part of overseeing is making me feel very old. So thank you for reminding me that new buildings can indeed apply for these things, Councillor Leppard. Thank you, Felicity Watson, as well. Your work on the heritage front is so valued by councillors and everyone in this city. You are a wonderful citizen of Melbourne. Look, I am torn asunder on this one because I'm actually a great supporter of an Apple store in Melbourne, but I'm also a lover of heritage and great architecture. And so to the extent that this report goes to the heritage values of Federation Square, I do agree with the mover that it is a very, very good report.
Thank you, Councillor Rees. Any other councillors wish to contribute to this debate? No, in that case. Sorry. Oh, yep, Deputy Lord Mayor.
I'm going to speak against this. And it's not because of the great work that our officers have done, I think it's difficult that we haven't had the time to sit down and talk this through like we would normally as a group. The issue I have is, in terms of the process of how we came to this with the Executive Director of Heritage Victoria approaching us to make a submission to support his submission to the Register, I've got just an issue with in terms of process, and that is another level of government effectively coming into another level of government's process and potentially having an impact on that process, regardless of what you feel about the Apple store. And obviously we've had our same issues around heritage registers. So I absolutely don't want this to be a reflection of the massive amount of work that officers have done on this supportive submission. I'm wrestling with this a fair bit, and Felicity, obviously your submissions are always fantastic, as yours, Chris, and this is not about the place itself. I've got issue with the process.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Any other contributors to the debate? Councillor Watts.
Well, I accept the point that my colleague has made about the process. I'm thinking of the end result in this, and sometimes we have to consider the best outcome for Melbourne, and clearly supporting this is going to be the best outcome for Melbourne. We don't need to discuss Apple here. What we need to consider is the value of this particular space and how significant it is to the city of Melbourne and the people of Melbourne. And that says it all as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Any other contributors to this debate? Councillor Lee Lu.
I have to agree with Deputy Lord Mayor here. I personally think, you know, this, you know, it's great work and everything, and I think you learn a lot from that. But at the same time, I think there's just too many, you know, when we make decisions, it's not about political, you know, influence or anything. But I think there is just a lot of, in terms of process, but also in terms of, you know, politics, and I think that's just one of the things that I really don't like, and this just smacked a lot of it, so I can't support it as well.
Any other contributors to the debate before I definitely reply? Councillor Oak.
Well, I just want to make sure that my support for the recommendation is recorded. I think that I'm really thankful of officers in taking the initiative to provide us with this advice with regard to the recommendation from Heritage Victoria is I thank them for that, and it actually helps to understand why we should support the heritage listing. It clearly, the report that's attached and the amount of work that's gone into it clearly articulates why a new building like this should be considered. We go on about how important this space is in the city, in particular for cultural purposes, like modern cultural. And obviously I thank officers for picking up the importance of recognising traditional cultural aspects as well and the traditional owners of the site. But from a recent culture of Melbourne, this site is incredibly important, and I don't believe that we would have had that opportunity to really highlight and showcase it in a way that the officers have provided us by bringing the report before us tonight. So I think in thinking about the ability and absolutely the precedent of recommending heritage for buildings or sites that aren't perhaps considered old, I think that the debate is certainly one we should have, but I think that the report and the submission allows us to very clearly say yes, it is appropriate to recommend heritage for sites that are considered new, given how important these, as I think the mover says, the scarcity of these spaces is something that the city needs to make sure that we're holding on to and not repeating perhaps bad mistakes of the past, and we are not ensuring protection of really important spaces regardless of when they were created.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Any other contributors to the debate? A couple of things came up during the debate that I'll just respond to. Firstly, I would politely suggest that every planning decision that comes before this place is political. We're a political body, just as much as an administrative body. But I didn't mention the word apple. I'll have to blame that on someone else. The decision before us, this brings me to the second thing. The decision before us, I would imagine, has been referred to us because we control some of the land along the outskirts. We have to reply. The executive director is obliged to refer it to us because we control some of the land. Therefore, we're obliged to reply. Therefore, what's the best process of doing that? Do we do the whole thing under delegation and not involve the council? Do we come up with a recommendation under delegation and then put it to council? Or, because it's so political, do we set up a process that's at arm's length that gets expert advice that's not tarnished by the politics of those in this place, and bring that recommendation, which is as pure as it can be in the difficult political context, and put that to the council for consideration? That's the option that officers chose. I would suggest it's the best option on the table, and that we are obliged to reply under the Heritage Act. Finally, the other point about ad hoc planning. I think that we've all had things to say in this place about master planning of the site and the desire to get some sort of more cohesive and transparent and public plan for the site. Well, a citation on the Victorian Heritage Register will again oblige the creation of a conservation management plan, as Felicity has mentioned. That can only improve things as well. So they're the three things I just quickly wanted to pick up on, but I did just want to close by thinking that by acknowledging that I think we really are obliged to reply to the Executive Director and to the Heritage Council. I'll put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. That is carried. Councillors Leppett, Oak, Riley, Rees and Watts, and those against, Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillor Lelou and Councillor Louis. That is a majority. It is carried, but the referral trigger will be, the referral notice will be triggered. I now hand back to the Lord Mayor, who will need to come back into the room if I'm going to do that. Thank you very much. We'll just pause again for another 30 seconds.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett. This concludes reports from management this evening. There are no items of general business to be considered. Councillors, in between my breaths, are there any items of urgent business that you would like to raise at this point? No? Thank you very much. We now have a 15-minute period for members of the public to be able to ask questions. That leaves you, Chris. Is there a question you would like to ask us at this point? No? Thank you very much, and thanks always for your participation. I loved hearing you strumming your guitar the other night on Bourke Street. Well done. I wish to thank all members of the public, management and staff for their interest and attendance and declare the meeting closed at 7:46 p.m. Thank you, everyone, and welcome to Claire as our acting CEO, which I should have said at the start. Claire, do apologise.